My values set the standard of my life. We are here in Owerri, in Nigeria, and our program is values, how they affect our life and how we can handle them. Now, my values set the standard of my life. A lot of people have very strange values. They have values that they think they are so important. They have values that they think that are that the world should rise and fall on their enjoyment and so forth. Well, we were speaking this morning about how some person might say black is white and white is black, and what sort of an attitude would we have on that? Should that destroy or disturb our values, or does that merely enhance our values? What if someone were to say to you something so contrary, black is white and white is black? Is your first response one that says, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. They're on the wrong track. They're trying to get me to think things and say things that are not really beneficial. Now, when we do that, what are we doing? We are letting other people and their attitudes and their world touch us. Now, if we had the fellow called Obama, if we had him walk into the room right now, what would we do? We would instantly just continue with our program and say, sit down. We'd say, don't disturb us, we're having a seminar here. We'd say, our values are setting the standards of our life, and our values are that the seminar is far more important than anything else. Or would we say to that man, welcome. How wonderful it is that you are here with us, sharing with us, working with us, and allowing us to enjoy your life and your world and the things you're doing. How wonderful that is. That is really a magical time. You see, our standards for our values set the standards for our life, is something that we sometimes get crazy over. We feel that if the children aren't home in time for supper, that they should be just locked out of the house. We feel that if someone is discourteous to us, we should just be discourteous to them. We feel that if someone is unhappy with us, we should be unhappy with them. Well, what sort of standard do you have in your life? Are you a person who can be touched by other people and what other people say and do? Or are you a person who knows who you are? Do you know, you go around prattling the idea, I'm God, God I am, I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. And you say those things, you really probably mean them at the time you say them, but can you uphold them? We go back to the illustration of Jesus and the devil. The devil came up to Jesus and said, hey, I'll give you everything if you follow me. And Jesus said, I have everything already. And the devil said, shucks. Now, the devil tried to get Jesus to follow him. He didn't realize that Jesus already knew who he was, that he was God, that he's master, that he's creator of his world, absolute creator of his world. Now, what about you? If someone comes up to you and says, hey, I'll give you $100,000 if you will lie for me. You say, well, how big is the lie? And how big is the lie? Is there any bigness or smallness to a lie? Is a lie regardless of whether it's big or small, or whether it's anything that's harmful or not harmful? What are you saying about a lie? How do you feel about a lie? Do you think that a lie can be done? Is it in your value structure? If a lie is in your value structure, you're in trouble. Because that's not what the world is. We might say, oh, people would do anything. You pay them enough money and they'll say anything and do anything. Well, there are some people, you pay them enough money, they'll do anything and say anything. But what do you think of those people who do anything and say? You have no regard for them. They're not anybody you respect. They're not anybody you would want to emulate. They're not anyone that you have any belief that they're doing the right thing. Now, you say, well, my goodness. All right, let's just look at our legislators. Our legislators go to each other and they say, now if you vote for my project, I'll vote for your project. And you say, I don't like your project. Well, you vote for my project and I'll vote for yours. You don't vote for my project, I won't vote for yours. And they say, well, no, well, what the heck, you know. What difference does it make? Well, you see, he just sold his soul. He didn't sell the project and say the project was worthy of being supported, worthy of being backed, worthy of being done. He didn't go out there with a heart full of love and say, hey, look at this new project I got for us here. Look at how wonderful it is and how it meets the needs of so many circumstances. How wonderful that is. Now, there will be people who will say poo-poo, but there will be people also who want to get on the bandwagon of your good project. Now, can you be true to yourself at all times? Can you be true to yourself at all times? You know the old illustration. The man offered a woman $50 to go to bed with her, and she said no, and 100, no, 1,000, no, and 5,000, no, and then 10,000, she says, well, oh, what the hell, you know, what difference does it make? Well, she just sold her soul. Now you say, that's really not a big bad deal, that's not a terrible thing, it's nice to get money for whatever you're going to give away anyhow, and so, but what do you think of that woman? What do you think of the act that she did? Not the sex, but offering her integrity and her statement that she says, I will not, for a sum of money. You all have done that from time to time. You all have done that with your children. You have done that with your spouses. You have done that with people in your world. You have agreed to do what they want you to do because they agreed to do what you want them to do. Never, if you can possibly understand it, allow yourself to say yes to something that is not your conviction. You say, well, golly, if all of us did that, this would be a very, very wonderful world. If all of us stood up for our convictions, just imagine what would happen. Just imagine there'd be no lying. That is the first point. Wow! Ooh-wee. You could trust one another. You could live your original purity and integrity. Wouldn't that be an exciting moment? Well, that is an exciting moment for some people. That is an exciting moment for some people who have integrity, who stand up for it, and who say, this is who I am. We keep using Obama as an example, and he's a good one. But when he wanted to become president, he wanted to be on the ticket, they told him, you've got to agree to our program. We are the ones who have set up the ticket, we are the ones who set up the party, and we want this and this and this. And he said, perhaps I'll do that, but I have my own program. I'm going to stand up for my own program, I'm going to live my own. If you want me, if you want to win this race, if you want to win the presidency for our party, you better choose me, because these other guys aren't going to make it. No way. Hillary Clinton isn't going to make it because she's too weak. And the other fellow is too old. He has no conviction about him. He has no sparkle about him. He was put in there, I think, probably to lose, because they wanted whoever was going to come up with Obama to win. Now, think about that. Think about that. Do you think that Obama, who wanted to be president and was offered the presidency if he would agree to certain things, and he didn't take it, do you think that he would say, I want it, but you know, I can't afford to sell my soul to the company store? So he could not do that. He could not do that. And you'll read a lot about him. People love to write books about him, and he loves to talk about what he's doing. He has, you see, the thing about Obama and I are a great deal alike in this respect. Obama teaches what he believes. He lives what he believes. I teach what I believe, and I live what I believe. Every moment of my life is based upon what I believe, who I am, where I'm going, what's important to me. And every moment, I believe, of his life is the same thing. At least so we've seen in everything he's done. Most amazing boy. Now, can we, each one, stand up to such a rigorous experience? Can we say to ourselves, I will not sell my soul? Can we say to ourselves, I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace? Can we say to ourselves, I live my original purity and integrity. If we can say to ourselves that I live my original purity and integrity, then what we are saying is there is no room for anything other than our original purity and integrity. Now, does original purity and integrity allow room for lying? No. Does original purity and integrity allow room for finagling, to try to get something and bargaining and things like that? No. Original purity and integrity is just straight across the line. What it is pure honesty, pure truth, pure sincerity, pure love, unconditional love. Now, each one of us would love to have that sort of an expression in our life, and we do. It's just a matter that we have to make a decision whether it's important enough for us to do it, to follow through on it. Okay, now we'll just take a little illustration here. We have people who have illnesses in our life, and these people are experiencing unhappiness in that illness. And if we were to speak our word as a group or as an individual and say, I see you whole and perfect, in my integrity, in my spiritual purity and integrity, I see you whole and perfect. I mean it. What would happen to that individual? Like that. They would no longer be experiencing the unhappiness they have. No. Does the other person have to accept it? No. However, if I see the person whole and perfect, for me, that person's whole and perfect, even though that person may go around acting unwhole and imperfect. You know that, well, just my girls, they go to the doctor and have their annuals and things. And one of them went to the doctor, and she had a pain that she couldn't describe. And she had an ache she couldn't describe. And she had aches in her teeth she couldn't describe. She just got a whole new teeth. And so she went to the doctor. And she said, Doctor, I've got these pains and aches. So the doctor did everything to her, the full 9 yards, checking her out. And you know, there's not one thing wrong with that person. There's not one thing wrong with her teeth. There's not one thing wrong with her body. Not one thing. Now, why was she having this pain? Why was she having this unhappiness about herself? Well, we can have unhappiness about ourselves even though we don't have the condition. And we can have the condition, and we can have happiness about ourselves even though we have the condition. Now, what is it that heals people? And I don't like to use the word heal. What is it that returns people to their original purity and integrity? What is it that returns people to their original purity and integrity in our expression with them? What returns people to their original purity and integrity in our expression of them is our thought about them. Our thought about them. Each one of you have had that thought. Each one of you have thought about someone who is ill, about someone who needed healing, someone who needed to put their thoughts back in right order. And you boldly and stupidly, you say to them, put your act in order. Put your act in order. Put your house in order. Make yourself whole and perfect. Put your house in order. Be whole and perfect. Now, what are we doing? We are lying to them. We are saying to them, I do not see you whole and perfect. Make yourself whole and perfect. You understand? I do not see you whole and perfect. Make yourself whole and perfect. Now, the person's going to say, yeah, you should have what I got. You should have what I got. And you would complain too. If we are spiritual masters, if we are living according to our personal integrity, our original purity and integrity, we will see everybody and everything whole and perfect. There is nothing on the face of the earth to heal. Everything's whole and perfect. Everything that everybody has that is not whole and perfect is an illusion. And as an illusion, what does it do? As an illusion, it just takes that person and makes them feel they have a real great problem. It takes that person and makes them feel that their life is not worthwhile. And that person feels it's not any good. But what about you? You feel that person's not any good. The moment you tell a person to put his act in order, the moment you tell a person that he's not whole and perfect, you're seeing them not whole and perfect. And you cannot afford to see anyone not whole and perfect, because that's not the way it goes. The only way you can ever see anybody is whole and perfect, because that is the way it goes. Now, do you want to? Do you want to live principle? Do you want to live the teachings of these metaphysical principles? Or do you want to live the teachings of some other principle? Some other principle that doesn't quite go into that. It's up to you. It's up to me. How do I want to look at myself? How do I want to consider myself? Do I want to consider myself as whole and perfect or not? Do I want to consider everybody in my world as whole and perfect or not? Okay. I told you I went in to see this woman who was dying of cancer. And she went to the doctor and said, "Doctor, tell my family it's a misdiagnosis." She had the courage to say such a thing. And her family came in and changed the energy vibrations of that room. This woman was actually experiencing these illnesses, and her body showed it, and it was very unhappy. But her family came in, "Oh, Grandma, you're going to be okay. Oh, Mother, you're fine. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. You're going to live." You know. Now, do you think that's strong vibrations? Do you think those vibrations of the illusion of illness can completely change into the illusion of wholeness? Is the wholeness underneath the illness? Is the wholeness behind everything? Whatever illusion, whatever appearance might be up on top, beneath it is wholeness and perfection. That's our original beingness. That's our reality. We want to return to that original purity, that original integrity, go back to it and believe it. We want to live by our values. And our values are very important. Our values are exactly who and what we are. And so many people will say to you that you can cheat and lie and steal, and that's okay. When you're a little child, other children will say, "Hey, let's go steal this or take that." Nobody will notice it. And you say, "Gee, thanks, my mother just called, I gotta go. See you later." You do not participate in those things. Even as a child, you don't. It's not your nature to go and participate in something that is improper. It's not your nature. No. When does it become your nature to do something that's improper? When does it become your nature to do something that's improper when people come at you and threaten you? When do you lose your values, lose your standards, as you are threatened to do something? Did anyone ever put a gun to your head and say, "Do this," and they said, "Okay, okay," you wanted to live rather than be dead? Or did you say, "No? I don't, that's not my way of doing things. I don't believe in that. Shoot me if you must, but I don't believe it." And they won't shoot you. They don't know. They never meet people who have such integrity that stand up to a loaded gun stuck at their head. They don't know that, and then they back off. You say, "Well, I wouldn't take a chance on it." Well, then your integrity really isn't worth very much. When your integrity is so pure and so great and so wonderful, you are untouched by anything, even the person standing there with a gun to your head. Now, you say, "Well, it'd take a very special person to do that." And it wouldn't. It takes just you standing up for principle. My wife was a little shrimp of a woman, and she had to go and cover a news story of a strike in a factory. And in this factory, the men were all kind of angry at the company. They wanted more money, they wanted this, and they were really very, very, very angry. And my wife is very naive, and so she went in to cover the story. And as she went into the factory, the Peterbilt factory, where they build these big Peterbilt 18-wheelers. And as she went into the factory, the people looked at her and said, "What are you doing here? What are you doing here?" And she said, "Well, I'm covering this story. I want to see the president, and I want to talk to him and see what's going on." And so they said, "Okay." And they took her into the president's office. And she said, "What's this all about?" And the president told her. And then the union rep was there, and he told her. And she said, "Well, it seems to me that you're at a standstill as long as neither one of you want to give in. Now, if both of you give in a little bit, then everybody would be happy. But you can't give in. Now, she's a very simple woman. She is not the psychologist. She's not into all that stuff. But she's just a lovely, caring, sensitive woman. And she said this to the president, you know, and when she told me what she'd done, I, and to the executives with the union too, the union steward. And when she came out of that office, the president and the union directors agreed on a plan that was absolutely acceptable to everybody in the organization. Now, they never said my wife was the instigator of it. They never said that she was the balancer, that she was the piece. But she went in there untouched by that loaded gun that was put to her head of these volatile people who were angry, 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 and they could do anything. They could do anything in their anger. Now, what happens when you stand up for principle, when you stand up for who and what you are? You're untouched by these things. You're untouched by these things. But when you allow the little vicissitudes of the world to seep into your consciousness and make you feel insecure, make you feel that you might be hurt or your family might be hurt, then what you do? You back out. You run away. And are you ready to stand up now for principle? Are you ready to say, hey, I can stand up for principle. Somebody comes at me and wants me to do something that I don't agree with, I would just say, no, I won't do that. Or I would talk with them and I'd say, why do you want this done? What benefit do you think is coming from it? And then we'd talk, and pretty soon I'd explain to them that the benefit that they want from that is really not bad. It's really not terrible. They are not in a condition where the world is going to hurt them. They're not in a condition where they're going to be hurt, where it's going to be beneficial to them. And as they talk about these things and think about these things, these beneficial ideas come into their life, and they find that they have a discussion, they have something that they can work with, that they can really talk about. Now, are you strong enough to do that? Are you strong enough to talk with people? Are you a diplomat? A diplomat doesn't give away his country. He merely makes everyone happy and harmonious as they're talking about the country. A diplomat is a magic person, both in a man and a woman. But a diplomat, as we hear on the movies, is not always a party person. The diplomat does a lot of background talk, you know, not known to the general public. A diplomat sometimes will even put his own life on the line, most of the time he will, for on behalf of his country whom he represents, because he feels that it is a worthwhile program, it is good, and he does it. So, here we are. What are your values? What is your standard for living? Who makes your standard for living? Who determines what is right and wrong for you? Who determines whether you are going to be a happy or an unhappy person? Who determines what is the way that you should go? Now, I know this would be an impossible thing, if not improbable, but just think, for instance, just for a few minutes. Just think that you are Mr. Obama. You are the new president of the United States, and you have respect from all the countries of the world. You have respect from your own nation. You have respect from your own party. You have respect, just unbelievable respect, but you earned it. That's who you are. You did not back off of any decision you made on behalf of your country, on behalf of your people, on behalf of the program you designed. Now, just say that you are him. Could you walk through life like he does? Could you walk through life with your chin up, chest out, shoulders back, tummy in, butt in? Could you walk with your arms like he... Endless pointed out to us, he walks with his arms just with a gait of confidence, of self-confidence, of beingness, that he knows who he is. He's not superior to anybody else, but he knows who he is. I told you perhaps about a story about Caesar. And Caesar Millan is a man from California, and he is a Mexican, and he came over from Mexico, and when he came to the United States, he had loved to play with dogs and animals in Mexico. When he came to the United States, he started to become a dog whisperer. And he learned how to whisper to dogs. Now, the way he learned how to whisper to dogs is he found out what it is that a dog responds to in life. He found out that a dog is a pack animal. A dog likes to move in a pack. It likes to go with other dogs. It doesn't always get that. So when a dog comes into a person's home, a dog is still a pack animal. And if the people in the dog's home do not take charge and are not the alpha, are not the in control people, the dog will take over and he'll make a mess out of the home. He'll be trying to protect it because he doesn't know how. He'll be trying to do all sorts of things to get attention. He'll be doing all sorts of stuff, just being a little mess. And so Caesar comes along and he said, "How long have you had the dog?" 6 years. "How long has the dog been acting this way?" 6 years. Did the dog have any failings when you bought it? No. Why do you think the dog has that now? I don't know. It must be its breed. It's bad bringing up and stuff like that. Well, who brought it up? You did, you know. Now, here's what we're going to do. First, I'm going to show you that the dog really loves you. So, he goes to the dog, and the dog's growling at him and wanting to bite him and wanting to get after him. And he's got just a mellow attitude about him. And he walks over to the dog, and he goes like this to the dog. Doesn't speak to him. Doesn't use his name. Because when the dog is uptight, you don't use its name. Because that infuriates the dog. So, you just say, "Peace." You don't say anything. You just say, with your hands, "Peace." You back up, back up. And the dog is so dumbfounded that here's the leader that he backs up. And then you say, "Sit." And the dog sits. And then the dog jumps. And you say, "Down." And then the dog tries to bite. And he grabs him on the shoulders with his hand, like a mouth of another dog, a biting factor. And he is calmed by that. And then you lay him down on his side and say, "Nothing." And then after the dog stops fighting, the dog is peaceful and submissive. Then you let the dog up. And then the dog, from that moment on, when the dog knows who its new master is, it is peaceful. Then when the other people are there, he teaches the other people how to tell the dog that they are its master. And when the dog knows that they are its master, then the dog is cooperative. Otherwise, the dog is bouncing all over the furniture and up and down and trying to be happy and very excited. And they say, no. Now, you take the dog for a walk. That's another way of showing the dog who is the master. You take the dog for a walk, and as you take the dog for a walk, you go at the front door and you say, "Sit." And the dog sits. Usually the dog runs out the door before its master. "Sit." And so then you walk out the door and then you say, "Come." And the dog walks behind your knee, and instead of looking around trying to see everything that he needs to protect you from, he's just watching you. And you keep the leash turning his head toward you, and he's watching you and becoming very docile. And then you walk along the road. And the dog walks right behind you, following you. You're the master. You're leading it. So then, the owners of the dog are there too. And he says, "Come." And so the owners of the dog walk alongside him, and then he puts the dog leash in their hand. And they walk along with the dog leash in their hand. And then Caesar, being an interesting person, he has his wife come and bring 3 or 4 dogs on leashes, and then he gives these leashes to the owner, the woman or the man, and they're holding their dog, and now there are these 3 other dogs, which they usually bark at and get angry at. But the owner is the master now, and the 3 dogs that are coming are submissive, and the dog that was not submissive before and now is submissive, and they all walk together just as nice as you could be, as wonderful as you could be, because he showed them who was the boss. Now, in your life and mine, we live a long time without showing who is the boss, without standing up for who we are. And because we don't stand up for who we are, people take advantage of us. They take advantage of us because it's the most happy thing in the world for them to do. They just come in and do what they want to do and act like they want to act, and in that process, they get away with murder. And pretty soon then, the dog masker, the dog whisperer, Caesar Milan, he comes in and he says, let's do it this way. Within 3 minutes, maybe five, he has all the dogs trained within that short of period. Now, the owner has to keep up that training for a period of time. He has to keep that dog realizing that the owner is the boss. Now, as long as the owner says it's the boss, it is. Okay. So, Mr. Obama went into the committee who were in charge of the election of his party, and they called him in, and he said, yes, I want to be president. He didn't say, I want to be president. Yes, I am president. And they said to him, well, now, we will back you in our party if you will do these things. And he said, I'll check them over. Some of them may be acceptable, some not. But whatever I choose to do, I will do. Well, you have such a fantastic program already. That's such a great program. Well, that's pretty good, isn't it? Well, yes, but some of it is contrary to what we would like done. Well, that's the way the ball bounces. I am me. Now, if you want me as your president, back me up. If you don't want me, I'll have another party. Back me up. I'll be an independent. And you know, if he ran as an independent, we would say, what use is there for parties when a good man can walk in there and become elected president without the parties? That's not a bad idea. So, Obama is an excellent dog whisperer. He goes into these wild dogs in these party headquarters and listens to them as they say, do this, do this, do this. And he said, I am me. I am a fantastic man. I am his charisma stands way out. And he said, this is what my decision is. This is how I'm going to conduct my campaign. This is how I'm going to do once the I can start signing the bills. This is what I am. I'm already president. And they said, but, we've never had anybody like you. We've never had a situation like this. You know, we've always had where we could twist these candidates around and get them to do what we want them to do and make them into nothing. Make them into men who have no backbone, who have no strength, who have no courage to stand up for any convictions. And that's what presidents are sometimes. As long as the party rules them, they have no courage to do for themselves. They merely are a figurehead like the Queen of Elizabeth. Queen Elizabeth. She's a figurehead for Great Britain. And whatever she does nothing. But you see, Queen Elizabeth is not an honorable queen. Queen Elizabeth is not an honorable queen. She thinks that she should buy her way into the hearts of the people in a way that is not proper. Do any of you know what that is? She feels she should pay taxes. Well, the whole purpose of the country is to pay taxes to provide her with mansions and houses, to provide her with everything great and good. That's the whole purpose of having a queen. Our president doesn't get all those things. Our president gets a salary. He gets certain conditions to work under. He gets a house to live in. But one house, he doesn't have a dozen houses like the queen. And then the queen has millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars in her bank book, and she's paying taxes on the amount that she's earning each year. It's a ludicrous experience. Now, the queen is not a bad lady. She's trying her best to be the mandate of the people. But she's allowing herself to hear the incorrect advice of her advisors, who say that if she pays taxes, the people will love her more because you're one of them. Well, how can you be one of them if you are taking their money and paying it back in taxes? Her money comes from the people. She takes it from them, then she pays it back in taxes. It's the silliest thing in the world. But again, she is allowing herself to be pushed around. Has any king or queen before her ever allowed that to happen?
No.
Will any queen or king after that allow it to happen? No. And when a king or queen is made king or queen, they're made biggies. They're made to be running the empire. They're made to be in charge. But they've made themselves into figureheads because they become weak and ineffective. Obama is not going to be weak and ineffective. The various other presidents we've had have been very good, but they've been weak and ineffective because they've been pushed around by their party. You are pushed around by your wife and your husband, your family. You're pushed around by your boss and your world because they want you to do certain things in a certain way. And so you say, well, okay, that's not what I planned. Don't say okay. They might fire me. Don't say they're going to fire you. If they say, now look, I would like to have you do this way. And you say, I've been thinking about that. If we do it that way, we will earn 50% profit on our investment program, and it's a good thing. But if we do it this way, that way that is over here, we'll earn 75% profit. Oh, 75% profit, unheard of. And the boss will say, yes, go for it. Yo, yes, go for it. Here's a raise for you, too. Go for it. Would he say that? He sure would, wouldn't he? He sure would. My grandson, he was in his 20s. He worked for a company, and the company made sterile equipment for hospitals and things like that. And so he was a sterile welder. And he welded in this sterile compartment where he was, you know, so that it was so perfect and clean and stuff. And then he had to go in each other department and drag his piece into each department and then weld it there and do things there. And then he'd go into another department. And he told his boss, he said, you know, I don't mind doing what I'm doing. I'm perfectly happy about it. But if I would have a full set of welding equipment of my own, which is not very expensive, I could do all of these things, and I could have a stockpile waiting for each of the other departments to do their work, and they wouldn't have to be delayed waiting for me to come and work in their department so they could go on. Now, what do you think of that? And the boss said, let me check it. So the boss checked it. He said, you're right. You're right. He said, I think that's an excellent idea. And so he instituted the idea. But he fired him. He fired him for whatever reason. But he fired him probably because he didn't need him anymore. He talked himself right out of a job by having the equipment moved from department to department. And so I asked him, I said, Paul, are you upset by being fired? He says, no. He said, I'm happy. He said, I can get other jobs. He said, I've been offered other jobs. And he said, they want me back as soon as the market goes into full gear again because I'm so good. But right at the moment, they're cutting down all things where they can. And I showed them how to save money, and part of it was me not being there. So, but you see, in that respect, he talked himself out of a job. Now you say, well, what's so cool about that? Well, what's so cool about that is he had the integrity to tell his boss how he could operate a particular avenue of that business better. And he was some 27, 25, 27 years old, just a young punk, you know, and telling the big boss how to do these things. So what is one of the things the big boss wants to do? The big boss wants to save face. He doesn't want to give this young man credit for what he did. He doesn't want to give his board of directors that this young man brought him to that thing. So he got rid of him. Now, is he ever going to come back to that company? Quite likely not. Are there other companies that could use him? Sure. But he became disillusioned. And so he's not going to encourage himself to do it. But the day will come that he'll find himself again, and he'll walk as beautiful as he can. Because if all comes to all, he can always go back and work for his dad building ultralight airplanes. Because he worked for his dad and did very well at that. But, you see, if we stand up for principle, even if it means that somebody might shoot us, or somebody might take our job away from us, or somebody might be unhappy with us, if we stand up for principle, we can do anything. Now you say, Herb, your illustrations were not very supportive of your thesis. The guy was fired. Your son, your grandson was fired. Yes, that's true. But the other guy was not. We can read lots of stories about people who stand up for principle how they have done beautiful things. What is it that you're doing? What kind of work are you doing? All of you are working where you are working with other people. You're working in situations where you're conditioned with secretaries, or you're doing things with the business or whatever you're doing. Now, what are you doing? Are you happy doing what you're doing? If you're happy doing what you're doing, that's beautiful. Now, how could you be even happier doing what you're doing? You could be happier doing what you're doing by putting some entirely new causes in motion. Some entirely new causes in motion which say to you, I have personal integrity. I have personal worth. I stand up for my judgments. I stand up for my values. My values are made out of the judgments of my life. My values are made out of... What does it say here? See, we had this wonderful statement here. Remember it? There it is. So, how am I... That's my consciousness. My values set the standard on my life. Do the values set the standard on your life? Do your values? Or are they negotiable? Are they changeable? Are your values something that is whatever is convenient to do? Now, I don't think that they are for you, because you're with me here. And you're standing here with great values that you hold very dear to yourself, and you feel that this is what's going to control your world. Okay, now, say you would like to be wealthy. Just say you'd like to be wealthy. And you're working on your projects of being wealthy. How are you going to accomplish being wealthy? How are you going to accomplish setting causes in motion to fulfill the desire of your heart? Well, number one, you make the silly statement, I am wealthy, when you are apparently not wealthy. I am wealthy, I am wealthy, I am wealthy. And you say to yourself, such a silly statement. I'm not wealthy, and I'm saying I'm wealthy. Well, as you say, I am wealthy, what you are doing is you're putting a cause in motion that you're wealthy. Your son comes up to you and says, Dad, show me how to drive the car. So you show him how to drive the car. And he doesn't do too well in the beginning. He makes a few bumbles, and you say, that's all right, just keep practicing, keep practicing. And he keeps practicing, and pretty soon you say to him, all right, now you can go by yourself. You can drive. You let me go by myself? Yes, I have confidence in you. Do you have confidence in yourself? Oh, yes. That kid will drive straight arrow. He will be absolutely perfect. He will do exactly what you want him to do, and he will do it wonderfully. He treasures the activity of driving. We have the grandson of Ellen on campus right now. Fine young man. He's 20 years old. And we have a Jeep and golf carts and a pickup truck and lots of other things. And he loves to drive them. And he drives them up and down the pathways through the campus, over the meditation trails, just having the time of his life. And I saw him driving. What he doesn't drive carefully in, I think, is the tractor. All the other vehicles which need to be driven carefully and beautifully, he drives carefully and beautifully. But he gets in that tractor, and he's been driving a tractor for years and years and years in Europe, and he makes that tractor do things that I never dreamed it could do. He just brings it along, and he grades roads, he cleans out areas, he picks up stuff. He just makes that tractor dance for him. Now, is he careless with the tractor? No, not at all. He is a genius with it. He is using exceptional skill. Now, what do I think of him? I think he's wonderful. I think that he says he'd like to come back to the campus again. I said, well, it's fine, come. You're welcome to come and work on the tractor or anything else you want to work on. But what's he doing? He is learning how to be what he wants to be. He's always a gentle, mild young man. Always a very sensitive, caring fellow. Always somebody who listens to the rules and follows them perfectly. He's honesty personified. Now, do you think he will make a success of his business? So all of those children, of Ellen's grandchildren, are doing fantastic. They're great athletes. And the one boy, who was 23, he went up to the Palace Hotel in San Moritz and said, I want to teach skiing. And they said, okay, demonstrate what you can do. And he is a great skier. He has proved himself, won trophies by the gazoo, and he's just really a wonderful boy. Well, he went out there with exquisite skill and showed them what he could do. And he came back, and they said to him, son, he's perhaps 2 years older than they were, they said, son, will you take over the ski instruction here? Not just the instructing an individual, but instructing all the instructors. Will you teach everyone how to ski so they can teach how to ski like you ski? And of course, wow, he thought that was just great. And so he went home, told his parents, and his parents said, well, of course. Isn't that who you are? A great skier? Fantastic. He said, yes. And you see, he believes in himself. But he not only believes in himself, he proves himself. He stands behind what he says. He stands behind what he believes. And he stands behind everything about him. And everybody just instantly falls in love with him and instantly believes in him, and instantly they get the results from him. So you, in whatever work you're in whatever area you're in, whatever things you're doing, just be like these kids. Be like these kids. They have fun doing what they're doing. They don't go in there frightened of their job. They don't go in there frightened of that big tractor. I went to Europe before I came here in Switzerland, and Ellen says, see that tractor there? And here was this humongous thing. And she says, that's what he drives when he's home. Twice as big as ours. Monster, standing up like this, you know. And you drive it sideways on hills, and you do things that, you know, you're very careful. You got that doesn't tip over. But he knows how to do those things. He knows how to use caution. He knows how to do it with excellence. You too. Whatever it is you claim is what you enjoy doing, you know how to do it with excellence. You know how to do it and be it and enjoy it. And you don't have to be a young person to do this. You can be 80 years old. You can be 100 years old. You can be whatever you want. If you are good at what you are, you're good at it. If you're wonderful at what you are, you're wonderful. I dove into the swimming pool up at the ranch, and her grandsons were all around there, and her granddaughters. And as I dove in, I felt, hey, I'm going to do I used to teach swimming, and I used to do a lot of swimming as in the Navy and as a kid. So I dove under the water, and I wiggled around under the water, you know, doing dolphin flips, and I came up and leaped out of the water and went back in. And then I swam around and did all these things. And the kids were all looking at me, and they were saying, my God, you know, how can you do that? How can you do that? You know, you're only 25, you know. How can you do that? Well, you don't do these things. You don't swim like a fish. You are a fish. You don't drive a tractor like a great tractor driver. You are the tractor. You live inside of that steel casing the tractor is, and as you guide the tractor to accomplish the things you want it to accomplish, magic happens. As you do any of your jobs in life, any of the things that you have every day to do, and you guide yourself through it, and then you do it, and you do it like a master. You don't do it like someone who's afraid. I'm not afraid, but I'm cautious. As I drive the tractors on the hills around the ranch, I'm cautious. Now, as he drives it, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's got his weight and balance figured out perfectly, and that tractor just hugs the earth. We had the tires filled with cement, and that made the tractor heavier and gave us better traction with our tires. Now we have to fill the back tires with cement, too. And the front tires cost about $400 just to fill them with cement. Now the back tires are going to cost a couple thousand. Ah! But if they are filled, that tractor will be a lower center of gravity, which makes it more secure and more fun and proper to drive. Now, here I am. I'm a writer. I have done many different things in my life, and I know about these things. I know about them right from the ground up. People call me in to talk to me about their business as though I were an expert in their business. Well, I am an expert in people. And so when I go in to talk to people, I'm talking to them about themselves. Just like Caesar Milan with the dog whisperer, he went into these people's homes and talked to these people. And he found out it wasn't the dog's fault. The dog was never told who was the boss. So the dog said, somebody's got to be the boss around here. And so he runs around circles and he tries to be the boss. I know you don't have that many dogs down here and that many experiences, but I know you have a few. But think about it. It works the same for the human being. When you don't know who's boss, it's hard to be a good follower. It's hard, and if you try to be the boss and you don't have confidence in yourself, Obama's got confidence in himself, fantastic. He is a great boss. And his, what do they call them? Protocol. His protocol people. Protocol is where they, it's the proper thing to do, the proper clothing to wear, the proper way to greet the prime minister, the proper way to greet these various people. Look, he knows the protocol, but he listens to his heart. And he goes in and he talks to the prime minister, and the prime minister says something like, oh, my granddaughter is just such a sweetheart, you know. Oh, great. And right away, he digs into the granddaughter. Before you know it, he's got that ambassador, whoever it is, right in his pocket, and the two of them are talking about grandkids and stuff like that, and he doesn't even have grandkids yet, but he knows about them. And he makes that guy feel so comfortable that they just sign their agreements without second thought. That's a master at work. It's not that you know everything about what you're doing. It's that you know what you're doing, you do according to principle, and you do it correctly. And if you do everything in your life according to principle and correctly, it'll work. And everybody will love you. Everybody will think that you are so fantastic and so brilliant, just absolutely brilliant. I have a lot of people think that I'm absolutely brilliant. And I think to myself, oh boy, oh boy. Now, how am I going to handle this? So, I come right out and say, now, would you explain what you're doing here? When I was writing for newspapers, and one of my requirements was to go out, cover farm features, write about the farmers. And I knew a little about farmers. So I take my son along on my scooter, and we drive out into the country to the farm. As soon as I get on the farm, the farmer's children would grab my son and take him around in their horse buggy and all that sort of stuff, just having a ball. And of course the farmer immediately liked me because his kids liked my kid. And my kid had to behave. And he did. So then the farmer would say, come, let's have a cup of coffee. So we'd sit in his kitchen and have a cup of coffee. And he'd say, now what is it you want to know? And I'd say, well, no, no. I have to write a feature on raising sweet potatoes. And I don't know sweet potatoes from white potatoes from Idaho potatoes. Now, can you tell my reader so that I can write it down, and my reader will have the simplest explanation of how you raise sweet potatoes. And he's a Portuguese farmer up in Atwater. How do you raise the sweet potatoes? So then he says, well, let's see. So he goes back into the other room, and he gets six sweet potatoes and lays them on the table, all different sizes. And then he gets a chart that he has used to teach his children about raising sweet potatoes. And he brings that chart out for me. And he said, now, here is how we raise sweet potatoes. And he said, we don't usually tell other farmers this because this is our secret, and that's why our crops are always number one. But he tells me, and he tells me everything. He gets so excited about telling, and I write down everything he says. I didn't have a tape recorder then. So my little notebook, I wrote in teensy-weensy type, and I got into that, all his story, and correctly. And so then I would leave him after I was done, and I'd take a photograph of the charts that he showed me, and of the potatoes, and of how they age, and how they are supposed to be handled in the ground, type of fertilizer, watering, nurturing of them. And so I went back to my office, took my son home, and I went back to my office and sat at my typewriter immediately, and I typed up my notes immediately. They're still fresh right here. And as I did that, it's wonderful. My story was all written. So I went back to him, and he looked at it, and he said, God, you sure know a lot about sweet potatoes. I said, yeah, you sure know how to teach people about sweet potatoes. I said, I am really pleased. I should put your name on the head of this article, not mine. You're my interviewee, and you are the one who told me all these things. You're fantastic. I mean, I'm so happy with you. He said, well, if it helps you with your story, use it. If not, don't use it. Herb, it's just great to meet you. You're a genius. You're wonderful. You know more about farming and sweeps. I don't know nothing. I go in there and I tell him, tell me how to do it. And he tells me, and I listen, and I write it down, and I learn, and then I go back and tell him what he said, and he thinks I'm a brilliant guy. Now, can you do that? Sure. Do you do that? Sure. Do you go around letting people know how brilliant you are by how well you record and copy and keep track of the things that they tell you? Sure you do. Now, we all have this wonderful facility of being a genius. We all have the wonderful facility of being absolutely brilliant. But the facility we want to develop just a little bit is a very, very special facility. It's a very special facility called humility. Because having humility opens up every door for us. Obama is going to the head of state of every country of the world step by step. Obama is going to every governor of every state in the United States step by step. He is going to, that takes a lot of time. A couple days here, a couple days there, and you add them all together, where's the year go, you know? But he will have built up such a confidence in the world and the people in him that it's well spent. Now, how can Obama afford to travel around the world and leave the country in the hands of his administrators and ministers? He has chosen the utmost magnificent ministers who have proven themselves capable in the fields that they were working in. And these people are doing exquisite jobs. There are times that the legislators don't want to approve his choice of minister, and he says, I want that person. And they said, you'll be sorry. And he says, I want that person, and I won't be sorry. And so he gets that person. And that person, because they now have overcome the greatest obstacle they had of getting onto the president's panel, are absolutely exquisite. They back him up on whatever his suggestion is, and it's his presidency. It's his country. It's his world. He's doing it on behalf of the people of the United States, but it's his project, and he is in charge of it. Now, what project are you in charge of? What project am I in charge of? We think we're in charge of our working on a radio station or working for a magazine or working for whatever we work for. Now, if you're any good, everybody in the organization will realize in no time at all that you are the power behind the wheel. Not because you're better, but because you have such supreme humility. You have such a supreme ability to let everybody else think that they're running the show. And you are making sure it's run the way you say it's to be run. If they want the credit, give them the credit. You have it done your way. When the hit comes to shove, everyone's going to find out that it was your idea. It was your conviction. It was your choice. And these people carried it out. Sure, they carried it out. But you chose good people you could appoint to it. You chose good people to assign it to it. See? Yes. Are you ready for that? Are you ready to be such a master? Can you be a school teacher? And as a school teacher, can you say to your children in school, well, boys and girls, we have a wonderful schoolroom here. Now, we're going to have an organization. We're going to have, it's called the Company Schoolroom. And we need to have a president. We need to have vice president. We need to have people who take care of the janitorial, people who take care of watering the flowers. We need to have people who put out the books. We need to have people who take away the books. We need to have people who do all these things. Now, that's a lot of jobs. Oh, my goodness, that's only for people who are exceptional people. Well, the class will raise their hand. I want to do it. I want to do it. And they'll all join in wanting to be helpful. Now, if you are a brilliant teacher, you will tell them, now, this isn't your job, but don't tell anybody it's your job. Because if you have to explain to them that it's your job, you're not doing your job good. You do the job so well, everybody looks at you and says, that's their job. And they know it's your job because you do it with all your heart, all your love, and all your being. And that teacher, what would happen to her? By the end of the year, she would be teaching her class school topics, not manners and values and those things. Those things they'd be learning in the company that they established there, in the organization that they're running in the schoolroom to conduct the schoolroom in a perfect way. Now, children are not given enough to do. Children are bored in school. Children want to learn so much faster. You know that. Give a child a computer, and he's not interested in reading instructions on how to run it. He wants to get in there and run it. He wants to get in there and play the games. And you know what happens when he's playing the games? He's learning how to use a computer. He's learning how to be a master on a computer, because he's doing all these very technical things and all these very, very interesting, intricate things. And he is gaining confidence in himself in doing it. He's not afraid to press a button just because he crashes the computer. Other people say, "Oh, I crashed the computer, oh dear, oh me." And the kid doesn't say it. He says, "I crashed the computer. Endless, I crashed the computer." And Endless said, "Good, let's take a look at it." And he goes over there and he says, "Well, now what do you think we can do to uncrash it?" And, "Well, isn't it destroyed?" "No, no, no. And you just put it to sleep. Now, what do you think we can do to uncrash it?" "Well, I don't know." "Yes, you do. Now, I'm going to leave you alone for 10 minutes, and I'm going to come back. And I want you to think about what buttons you could press to start it over again and uncrash your computer." And so he walks away. And he goes away to the other students that he's teaching computer. And when he comes back in 10 minutes, the boy says, "I found out how." And he says, "You found out how? Many people have studied for years and can't figure out why they crash. Why did it crash?" "Well, it crashed because I pressed these two buttons at the same time. When I press these two buttons at the same time, the computer says, I give up. I'm out of business." And then, "How did you make it right?" And this says to a student, and the student puffs out his chest and lifts up his chin and pulls in his tummy and pulls in his butt, and he says, "I tell you what I did. I turned the computer off. And I waited a couple minutes, and then I turned the computer on, and it worked perfectly." "Oh no, you didn't do it that easy." "Yes, I did." "You did, that's not, oh, that's so easy. You did it that easy?" "Yes, I did." So proud. But you see, he will never forget how to uncrash a computer. Of course, there are many other ways too. But he will never forget that the first thing you do in computer policy, if your computer gives you trouble, shut it off. Shut it off. Let all of the programs fall back into their right little sockets. Let all of the things stop in their right order. And let everything go on and sit there and have a cup of coffee. You know, relax. And then turn your computer on in a normal way, and watch it perk up and say, "Hi, I just had a nap. I feel so good. I feel so wonderful. I feel I can accomplish anything." And it does. Now, when a teacher teaches with that sort of persuasion, when a teacher teaches with that sort of a love for her students and his students, the students are instantly going to cooperate. Now, you say, "Well, I have no such opportunity in the positions that I hold." Oh, yes, you do. You have the opportunity of saying to anybody in your world, in yourself, "I love you. I surround you with my pure white light of love. All my world, all my life is peace, and all my words, all my ways are peace, and all my paths are pleasantness." You say things so often, sometimes you forget the pattern. All right, "I like me. I'm divine order. I'm peace. I surround my car with my full, pure white light of love, and all its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasant." You say these things, and then you watch it happen. Then you watch it happen, how everything falls right into place. And everybody in your work is going to look at you and say, "Hey, you're fantastic, you know that?" And you say, "Thank you." Don't go into any detail. And then they come back later another time, they say, "Man, you sure understand this stuff, don't you?" "Well, I work at it, you know, and I listen within, and I work at it." "Wow, but you do so well." And then they come back later, and they say, "How did you learn to be so brilliant like this?" "Well," you say, "listening to you talk to me, telling me I'm brilliant, makes me feel brilliant. But otherwise, I think I have so much more to learn, so much more that I want to be," with humility. And they say, "Man, you have such wonderful humility. It's a joy to talk to you." Now, Can you really do that with yourself? Can you really be humble? Can you really be a representative of the divine in you? Can you let the God in you take the credit and you just stand there and just let the God in you take the credit? Well, God in me did it. You don't need to say that. You just say, well, I just knew. I just knew. Something in me told me what to do, and I did it, and I just knew. See, when Mabel talks to her class comes in there and they want to have a ball game in the beginning of class. And Mabel says, hey, we're going to have an election today. Remember Obama? Wasn't that a neat story? And the class says, oh, that's a great guy. Yes, yes, yeah. We should have him here in our country. And Mabel says, all right. We're going to have an election. And we're going to elect people to cover various jobs in the organization. But our president is going to be Obama. Whoever is elected president is going to be, his name's going to be Obama. So now, you decide who you want to be the president of your community here, of your school organization. And it's just for your class alone, it's not for the whole school. And so, the kids get so excited, they get so excited about the possibility of their having the opportunity to make a choice of an officer to run their world. Now, are you interested in such a thing? Are you interested in playing such a role with your job or with your world? You know, you can do marvelous things, wonderful things. It's all up to you. It's all up to you. I have a man in Switzerland. He creates, he had Simlazan first, which was an eye drop and very successful. And then he sold it for many millions of dollars. And then he retired. And he took his money and he started a cosmetic firm, making cosmetics. And he was telling me about the cosmetic firm and he showed me his business and how he's doing it. His daughter's working with him and everybody. And they're just coming along wonderful. And then he said, you know, I made this cosmetic perfume so that any man who ever smells it will think of the lady he loves the most. I made this so that any man who ever smells this perfume will think of the lady they love the most. Now, you say, well, how could they do something like that? I made this perfume so that the man who smells it will think of the lady he loves. I made this perfume, and on and on and on and on. I said, how do you know that? How did you research this? How did you do it? And he said, I made the perfume so that any man who smells it is going to think about the lady he loves. I made this perfume so that any man who smells it is going to think about the lady he loves. Now, do you think when you listen to him saying this and you smell the perfume and you see what he's doing, you're going to think the same thing he does? Now, when he puts this on his billboards and he says, I have made this perfume so that any man who smells it is going to think about the lady he loves. The women are going to be giving it by the bottle to their friends, to their boyfriends, and to their husband, whatever. People are just going to love it. But only because he made the statement and he stood up behind it. Whoever smells this perfume is going to think about the lady they love. Now, is that going to work? It sure does. It does already. He's selling up a storm. People love to hear of what he said. People love and believe in what he's done. And what he has done is successful, and what he's done is wonderful. And so he sold his business for millions of dollars, and now his new business is already worth almost as much as the old business was that he'd had for years. But he just has in his consciousness the entrepreneurship of coming up with ideas, of being creative, and being so creative that it sells and makes it money. Now, what about you? Do you have such a creativity about you? Ben has such a creativity about him, but I haven't been following him too closely lately. But he had that creativity about him in the past. Now, do you have that creativity about you, of who you are and what you are? Do you believe in yourself? Do you believe that whatever project you work on is a success? If you think that your projects are not a success, then they're not. If you think that any project you work on is a success, you empower it by your word to be a success. Now, you go into your company, wherever you're working, and you say to the boss, well, I sure like working here. This is a very wonderful place to work. Everyone is so friendly. Everyone is so cooperative. Everyone is so great. Now, you may have had some troubles at work. You may not have gotten along well with certain people. And the boss may know that. And so when you come in and make a pronouncement like that, the boss is going to listen to you and then let you go. And then the boss is going to think about it. And then the next time you see the boss, maybe a day or two later, you say, "Wow," one of your protagonists, one of the persons who disagreed with you, you're going to say, "Well, do you know what Jeannie did? I was just so flabbergasted. Jeannie came over and offered me half of her Twinkie. And she has never offered me a thing in her life. And wow, am I happy. Wow, you know? I don't even want to eat the Twinkie. I want to keep it and reserve it as a memory of something wonderful that Jeannie did." Now, that's kind of childish, kind of silly, kind of stupid. But the boss understands. The boss understands human relations. Now, if you come up with enough incidents of that nature, you've got to be aware of them yourself. And you tell the boss about it, he's going to think, "Man, you're administration type person, you know. You're a leadership type person. You're a boss type person." Wonderful. You are. I went to work on a newspaper in West Dallas, Wisconsin, after I just gotten out of college. And I wanted to be the editor. Well, usually start out as writing obits and marriages and wedding announcements and things like that. So my boss had me do everything. And he sent me off on all sorts of things. He gave me a big camera that I didn't know how to operate yet. And he told me, "Stick it in there, pull out the card, and put it at this F setting, and you're all set. Stick a light bulb in there, and you're in business." So I did, and I took pictures. But the first picture was of his wife in her group, her club. And it turned out great. Oh, it was great. We used it a half page, and it was wonderful. Then he gave me other jobs, and I did them. I did exactly what he said. I didn't mumble over writing obituaries. I didn't mumble over writing engagements. I didn't mumble over writing the society page and all that sort of interesting stuff. So, he was with me. I mean, I was with him. He was with me. See who owns the business already? I was with him. He was with me. So, we were together for a month, just 1 month. And he came up to me and says, "Herb, my family and I are going down to Florida for a month. You're taking charge." I said, "Ah, wonderful. You know, love it. No problem." So he took off. And when he took off, I had the opportunity of redesigning our page layout, our front page layout. And I had a bunch of great ideas from the Christian Science Monitor and from the New York Times and from some other newspapers that really were sparkly, that turned me on. So I took all of their ideas and I put it into my paper. I used their type styles and I used their layout and so forth. And when I sent it in, the first thing it did was it caught the eye of the professor at the university who was on the nominating committee for outstanding layout. And so he nominated it for outstanding layout. And then subsequent ones were even better. And he nominated them too. And so what happened? That before the boss came back, I had to go in to get the trophy from the university, from the Wisconsin Association of Newspaper Writers and Magazine Writers and so on. And it was fantastic. Now, I didn't know anything about that stuff. I read 4 books on journalism before I took my first job. My neighbor is a journalism teacher and he told me what books to read, and I read them. And then when I got on my job, none of it fit. So I had to wing it. I had to use my imagination. And so then when the boss leaves, right at the crucial point where I'm beginning to catch on, I had to use some other imaginative, creative idea. So I did. And I redesigned the paper. I redesigned this. I redesigned the editorial page. And I redesigned the editorials. I did all that stuff. I mean, I'm a 25-year-old kid like I'm today, you know, and doing those things. And I didn't care. I was having fun. I was doing what I like to do. And the professor kept nominating it for more awards. And I went in and picked them up. And so when my boss came back, Carol Benson, when he came back from Florida with his family, they said, "Wow, what happened here? And I told him, and he said, well, congratulations. Congratulations. That's great. Keep it up. And then he said, now, I've decided we're going to have two separate newspapers here. I'm going to start a special newspaper and this newspaper that we normally have. And he said, now you're editor of both of them. So here I am, editor of both newspapers, all because I was not afraid to step out and be imaginative, be creative, and use the ideas of somebody else who was very creative and very wonderful, and use that for our type of style. Now, my boss didn't like all of it. He liked most of it, but he didn't like all of it. And so he quickly changed back to what he had had originally. And what the heck, I can't blame him. It's his newspaper, you know. But it was just wonderful. I had such a great time in doing all that. And you can too. You can have a great time in doing all that stuff when you realize you're in charge of yourself. You're in charge of your world. Whatever dream you have, go and do it. And all they can do is fire you, or all they can do is shoot you, and they're not going to shoot you. They may get very upset with you because you're creative and imaginative and coming at them with all sorts of beautiful ideas, but go for it. Just like Endless here, he's always after helping children. And so now what's going to happen to him? He's going to do the publicity for the organization that's going to be promoting his project that he has. And he won't have to work on his project. He'll have other people to work on the project. Because that's just the way it's going to come down from the money people of the... what's their last name?
Bill Clinton.
I mean, that's what I said. Now, you may have other people, too. And that's great. But Bill Clinton is going all over Canada, and all over Florida, all over Africa, and giving out money to organizations that are in need of it. And so is Bill Gates doing that, Bill and Melinda Gates. So those things are becoming available, and if you have projects you want to sponsor with them, go and talk to them, and you'll find that they're very cooperative and they're very interested in helping you. But they're not interested in helping you if you don't believe in yourself. If you believe in yourself, you will have it, and it will be yours to do anything you want to do with. So, that gets us started on the topic. Do you have any questions?
Yes.
About anything?
Yes.
Yes.
You made mention of lies. Is there any useful lie?
A useful line?
Is there anyone?
A useful statement. Line?
Lying.
To lie?
Yeah, is there anyone that is useful?
Is it ever beneficial to lie, or is it ever correct to lie?
Yes. Is there any benefits?
Yeah. Is it ever beneficial to lie, or correct to lie? No. Under no circumstances.
Go ahead. Suppose an armed robber is driving somebody, and he comes into the house, you hire that person for a purpose to save his life. And he came to ask whether you saw this man, you say no. You know you have lied. But is that not helpful? Is that a useful lie?
If ever we do things that make things that are wrong in themselves to make them right, there doesn't make them right. Now, you say, if a robber comes into your house and wants to get somebody that is there, and you say they're not there,
yes,
so the robber will not shoot that person, and you say that isn't a useful lie that I didn't put his life in jeopardy? Well, no. He's going to be shot. That person is going to be killed, and he's going to die because he's putting a cause in motion of doing things that make a robber look for him. Now, why would a robber look for somebody who wasn't there? Why would a robber look for a man who he didn't even know was there? Unless you told him or somebody else told him that somebody else was there. Now, the error comes in somebody, you want my money? Here, give it to him. Now, did you want to say, I got money in my shoe too, and I got money over here in this cabinet here? You don't say those things. You want my money? Here, you give me your wallet. and he takes it. Now, are you lying because you don't tell him of your other places that you keep money? No. He didn't ask you. Now, have you got any money squirreled away anyplace? Have you got any money secreted away anyplace? He didn't ask you. Now, you say, you mean that if he asked me, I'd have to tell him? Well, I'm going to make this statement, and I want to make it so strong that you never forget it. Nobody is ever going to steal from you, lie to you, hurt you in any way, unless you create them doing it. If you, in your consciousness, are so pure and so true and so right, that when somebody comes up to you and they're of the nature of doing something of that nature, they don't do it because it's not your nature to have them do it. It's not your nature. Now, you say, well, what if you have a cold? Or what if you have a problem? Or what if you do something? Well, how are you going to handle it? Are you going to try to hide it? Are you going to try to pretend that you haven't got it? Are you going to try to pretend that you're bigger than this? Well, that's a nice thing to pretend. Are you ready to stand up for truth under all circumstances? Now, why would anyone ever want to hurt somebody who didn't hurt? How many times has your house been robbed? How many times has someone robbed, stole, burglarized your house? Never. Thank you. Never. Why? It's not in your consciousness. How many times has your house been burglarized? Yours. 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 Once? Once? Never?
Never.
Then say never. Don't go saying yes. You know. And yours? Did someone try to burglarize your house? No. Nope. Yours? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yes? No?
Somebody broke it.
Yes? No?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, that's all I want to hear. Yes. And Martin, your sister?
Yes.
Did they ever try to burglarize her house?
Yes.
Oh, they did. And yours? Yes, they tried to burglarize your house. Now, let's use Seville as an example. Seville is home here, and there's a burglar trying to get in the house. And he can't get in, because the house is protected. And so the burglar's out there, I know you're in there, I want your money, I want this here, I'm going to come in and get you. And Seville says, I don't know why I have created this diversion here, but I will not empower it. And so Seville went on reading her Art and Science of Wholeness textbooks, and she went on reading her various things and being herself, and she even went out and cooked a cup of coffee. And after a while, the person, who was not very nice, went away because he couldn't get in. He could not get... She did not invite him in by her fear. She did not invite him in by her feeling that she has no control over it. She didn't invite him in by her attitude. You understand? That's very important. Now, are you inviting people in your house to do things to your house? My dad always said he doesn't want to lock the front door because if a burglar comes along, he's going to break open the front door, and then he's got to buy a new front door lock. He didn't want to do that. And then he said, we have nothing of value in the house. Everything that we have is just things that we use. There are no diamonds and rings and things. Everything is just wonderful. And so what happened? I don't know that we ever had a burglary in our house. In fact, we lived in our community, and every door was unlocked, front door, back door. Us kids were running in and out here and there, and the neighbor kids were coming in. Nobody ever thought of taking something that didn't belong to them from the coffee table. If mother's purse were laying out on the coffee table because she was getting ready to go someplace, and then she went away and she came back, nobody would ever think of rifling her purse or taking it. Nobody. Neighbor kids are certainly not are her own kids, because it was not her consciousness. She always wrapped her house in her pure white light of love, and nobody ever confronted her. Now, you did the same thing. It came because you were aware that it was happening in the neighborhood, and you empowered it because you were aware it happened in the neighborhood, and you said, oh, yum, yum. And then when it came your way, you said, hey, 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 I don't want this. No way. And you just were a little mouse, quiet, and it went away. But you see, she heard that it was happening in the neighborhood, and so that made her frightened. That made her think, oh dear, is it going to happen here? And that's what happens to us when we fear that it's going to happen in the neighborhood or happen to us. Now, here we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people, and two of you had people approach your house to burglarize it. 8, and that makes 6. 6 of you were never burglarized, never touched by a burglar. Now, that's pretty good. Now, was your house burglarized? No. But it could have been, but it wasn't. You took charge, right?
Yes.
Yes, you did. Now, was your house burglarized, or did you take charge someplace along the line?
I took charge.
Now, the answer is yes or no, or else speak very loud.
They actually broke into the house. They did not leave away with something.
You told me outside there that you could speak very loud, and so I would be able to hear you very clearly. Now, come on. Come across.
I said they broke into the house, but they did not make the way with most of my valuable things.
They broke into the house, and they could not make way with your valuable things because they couldn't find
and
it?
And they were packing all those things. Well, now, you know, they came in and
So they really didn't rob you, they just came in and tried to.
It was my neighbor,
No, forget the neighbor. We're only dealing with you. I mean, if we're going to talk about the neighbor, we've got to add 9 people here, you know, not just 8. So, yeah, this is the important thing.
On now, 2 occasions.
What?
2 occasions. It was, in a very lonely area where people are not living so much. You are living at the end of that street. So, they broke into the house the first time. The things they packed to go with, somebody came in and they left out and ran away.
You make trouble for yourself by talking about what happens to the neighbors. That's a shame. It's a shame that we have to talk about what's going on in the newspaper and what's going on in television, because that's something else. Somebody else's house. In your house, you surround it with your pure... Hey, do you surround your house with the pure white light of love right now? Yes?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Yes. Good. You're a sharp lady. Okay, you surround your house with your pure white light of love, and all its ways are peace and all its paths are pleasantness. Okay, now, can a burglar ever enter a house so surrounded? Can a car so surrounded ever have an incident? No. Do you take the time always, whenever you do anything, to surround your house with your pure white light of love? Do you take your time to surround your car with your pure white light of love, and all its ways are peace and all its paths are pleasantness? Do you take time to do that? I do.
I do.
I do that in the airplane too. I surround this airplane with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace, all its paths are pleasantness, and we have a smooth, greased-on landing. Not, but a nice, smooth, greased-on landing. Because I know, I do them myself. So you see, it's fun, isn't it? Yeah. Just remember, this is not kind of what I'm going to say. Nobody wants to hear of other people's problems. If they're not your problems, don't tell me about them. If they are your problems, don't tell me about them. Tell me about the solution you want. How do I place myself in the security of, and I don't like the word security, in the pure white light of love, so that all things are in divine order, so that no one would ever think of doing something they shouldn't do in my world? Nobody. Nobody would ever think of being unkind to me. No one would ever think of taking something from me that didn't belong to them. Nobody, 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 right? Nobody. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
You agree?
I agree.
All right. Now remember that. That's the principle. That's the principle. Now, nobody wants anything that doesn't belong to them. And nobody ever wants anything that doesn't belong to them. Now, are you ready for that? Are you ready to be in charge of your life? Are you ready to put the cause in motion for all that is good and beautiful and wonderful? But be careful. It's tempting when, I have so many problems here. I have this problem, that problem, this problem, that problem, this problem, that. None of those things has anything to do with the one you're facing. But you bring them all up. I got everything going wrong with me. And then somebody comes along and they got things that are really going wrong with them. And you shut up. Because you see, they are experiencing things that are quite a deal worse than yours. But all the time, you put yourself in charge of yourself, of your world, of your house, of your car, of your finances, of your job, of your child. Now, You have been with me now these past 3 days. How many times during these past 3 days have you said, what's his name?
Nene.
Huh?
Nene.
His name?
Nene. That's my name, Nene.
What's his name?
Oh, Divine Light.
Divine Light. Okay. I surround Divine Light with my pure white light of love, right? I surround Divine Light with my pure white light of love. Now, I surround Divine Light with my pure white light of love. Now, what's going to happen to him? All good things. He's going to be so happy. He's going to be so content. He's going to think, my gosh, what is going on here? Mommy's away and the world is going better. You know? No problems. Mommy's home and all of a sudden we have all these little things that are bugging us. Now, you don't want that. You want it to be wherever you are is peace. Wherever you are is harmony. Wherever you are. Now, when Mabel goes to school and she walks in the door and her students are not acting correctly, Mabel will say, oh, I quit. No, she might like to say that, but she doesn't. Mabel walks into the schoolroom and she sees the children doing whatever they're doing, and she stops and she folds her hands and she looks into her hands and she says, peace. 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 She doesn't look up. She just stands there thinking peace. And the room quiets down. And then she walks up to her desk and she says, children, I have a story to tell you. And so she's a great storyteller. I make her that way. That's what I like. And so she tells them a story. She said, I was visiting a class this morning over in the poor section of town, and the children didn't have uniforms. The children didn't have desks. The children didn't have slate boards or pencils or anything. They just sat on the floor. The children had to just listen to the teacher. And so the teacher said, I'm going to tell you a story. And so the teacher told them a story, and they all were so excited because every time the teacher told them a story, it was like getting a whole semester of learning in that field. And so the teacher said, okay, today we're going to learn about English. Now, English is a fun language. English does all sorts of things. And in English, you can do things that are contrary and right. Now, what we're going to learn today is a simple English. And English that says what we want to say. All right, now, I had these 12 Indians from America. They came over to visit me in my classroom the other day. And as they were visiting me in my classroom, all of my students say, what do Indians do in America? Do all Indians wear sarongs and do all Indians have horses and go, oh, do all Indians do that? And they said, no. We wear nice clothes. We have nice schools. All of us who want to learn, the opportunity is there for us to learn, and we can do these things. Well, the poor children were sitting there wishing they could be Indians. And they said, well, what do you learn in school? And so the Indians told them, we learn first to respect our family. We respect our family because our family is the most important thing in our life. Our family keeps us together. Our family feeds us. Our family houses us and clothes us. Our family is so wonderful. And then they began telling little stories about what their family did. And the children said, wow, how wonderful, you know. And then they said, what's the next best thing? They said, well, recognizing that God is everywhere and God is good. But God's not good. God brought illness to my house and killed my little sister, and God did this and God did that. And they said, well, that's what people who don't understand say God did. And they say that God did that because they can't figure out why the child would die or why anyone would have problems. Well, God in you tells you exactly how to do everything. God in me? Well, that's what Jesus said. God's in you. And so, oh, really? How about that? Okay, they're ready to believe. And you say, and he said, it's done unto you according to your belief, and you're wonderful, wonderful. And wow, really? Well, what sort of, well, can I believe that I'm going to have a car? A little car to play with? Can I believe that I'm going to have a daddy who I haven't seen for a long, 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 long time, and mother and I live alone in the house? You know, live alone in our apartment? Am I going to have a daddy? Well, would you like a daddy? Yes. Okay. Let's all pretend that we are now going to bring Daddy into her life. Wow, that's great. Now, can you see how teaching from that point of view to people who have no values set up yet, they have no home values, their parents are living in a very destitute situation. And as these are taught to the children, their whole lives change. Now, as Mabel teaches these to her children about what other children in the world are going through, what's going to happen to her children? Her children are going to say, hey, can we write to those children in that class down there where they don't have any money? Can we send them some stamps, or can we send them some food? Can we take them to the park sometime? Can we take them to the zoo? Can we do something with those children? And Mabel says, well, why not? Why not? I tell you what. There are 30 little children in that class. And there are 30 children in this class. Now, would you like it if I just wrote their names on a piece of paper and threw it up in the air and everybody grabbed a piece of paper for whatever they could? And then that's the child that you are going to be adopting. Ooh, I'm going to adopt a child. Ooh, 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 ooh. And so they each get a name. And then the teacher says, all right, now I've already told the school down there that we're going to do this. Because I knew you would do it. I just knew you would all do it. So now let's take the school bus and go down and visit them. So Mabel takes them down to that school. And all of the children, all 30 children are down there, and all 30 children come into it. And she introduces the children around, and she says, now, our children from our school each have a card, and on that card is a name. Now, they will speak the name, and whoever it is, come and stand next to them. And so each child speaks the name. And here comes Mary Lou, and here comes Josephine, and here comes Peter, and here comes everybody, you know, and they're all standing next to the children. Are you really going to adopt me? Are you really going to adopt me? You know? They don't want to be adopted. They want to be cared for. And so the children say, yeah, but what does adopting mean, you know? And so they sit down there, and they have a lovely class, and then the teacher says, now we said adopting. That means caring about their needs. We're going to care about their needs. Now, every one of the children in my class have enough money to play with, and we're going to share that money with the children from that school. Now, what would you like to do? So the children said, well, I'd like to invite them to my house to meet my mom and dad, and I'd like to have them come and see who we are. And the teacher said, well, now that's very nice. But first, get to know them and make sure that you're happy with them. And so after a week or two, they get to know these children, and then they get to know their parents. And pretty soon they invite their parents and the children to come to their homes. And as they do this, the parents say, wow, you are very wonderful people. Even though you don't have anything, you are people with morals and with values. You are people who have integrity. You are people who are super. And so then what happens? What happens is that everything works out in perfect order. Everything, the children get along with each other. Pretty soon they have this project that they're helping the other children. Every spare penny they have, they send to the class to help them do things. Now, is that possible? Sure, it's possible. Isn't that a lot better doing thoughts like that than thinking about people who rob you? You know, there's so many people who are afraid of life. And because they're afraid of life, they are afraid of everybody in it. And they're afraid that people are going to try to hurt them or take from them or in any way to not let them be themselves. Well, that could be. That could be. But is that what you want? Is that who you are? No. I was with you, and we talked about your project. And I was with another man, and we talked about his project. And he was, somebody else took me off to their theater, didn't they? That wasn't you, was it? Did I go with you to the television theater? Did I?
Go to the theater with me.
I'm sorry?
Say, did you do what?
Did I? I went with a person. And I thought it was you. But anyhow, he took me to his television studio. And I got on their television program. And it was very nice. A very nice program. And we went to this lady's house, and we did the interview at her house. And I took pictures of my own little camera too, so I've got pictures of them taking pictures of me. But it was a beautiful experience. Now, what could he do wherever he goes? He could plant little seeds wherever he goes. And into all of these opulent houses and these opulent people that he meets all the time. All the people that he meets are very wealthy. All of them. And he could just say to them, well, I'll tell you a story about the little children at Mabel's school and what they did. Because I think it's just cute as can be. Don't say you should do it. Just tell the story. And make the story even more dramatic than I did. Because I didn't cover all the points that I could and can. So, but do that, and then you are opening the doorway. You are opening the doorway for beautiful adventures to take place in your life. Beautiful adventures to take place in the world in which you live. And wonderful things happen to you. You know, it's nice. So, don't worry about something that's not necessary to worry about. Because if you worry about something that's not necessary to worry about, you're liable to experience it. You're liable to have it in your world. And if that's what you want, go for it. But I don't think that's what you want. Now, did we answer a question, or did I just get off on my imagination again? Any other questions? Okay. Yes? No? No. Okay. Michael, you had a question at noon that you didn't ask. What was that question? Michael, move away from behind that man. You're sitting behind him, hiding.
No. I was just serious because my question is, sometimes we do say somebody is lucky.
Sometimes we do
we
things.
Say, oh, this guy is lucky. Now,
just a minute. Just a minute. Sometimes. Hush! Sometimes we do
we say
things.
Someone is lucky. Not fortunate. Fortunate.
Sometimes
we
do things.
Somebody is lucky.
Somebody is lucky.
Or another guy is not lucky.
Or another guy is not lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, what's prevent us to say it? Is it our consciousness or is it the situation the person is that makes one person feel lucky and another person unlucky? What's responsible for it?
Yeah, okay.
Is it our thoughts or the situation? Why do we categorize somebody's lucky, another person's not lucky? What is up with that?
Go ahead, you're asking me the question?
Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
The answer.
Yeah.
You want the answer?
Yeah.
Okay. Lucky?
Lucky?
How did Obama become president of the United States?
Fine, that was one
question. Right, how did Obama become president of the United States? What did he do to become president of the United States? Was he lucky?
No.
He's answering the question.
He's president.
That's not nice of you. Let him answer it. He wants to answer it. He's got all sorts of good ideas. Lucky. How did Obama become president? Because he...
Because he made it.
He wanted it. That's right. No. Simple as that. But he... No. That's a joke.
In other words...
People, everybody doesn't want it. Because anybody who wants it can have it. And that's true. If you really want it and you see yourself as president, you have it. And you say, well, you mean Hillary Clinton didn't see herself as president? That's right. You mean everybody else? I don't even remember the other candidates.
Yeah.
They didn't see themselves president either. Yes.
Nothing happens by chance.
Nothing happens by chance?
Nothing happens by chance. Anything that happens for a purpose. So to say that somebody is lucky or unlucky is out of the question.
What cause did they put in motion to make it happen?
Now, I want this, I have it.
I have it.
So I'm not, it's not a question of saying that I have a good luck or having this or bad luck. It never happens.
I see.
It's there because it is there. You want it. You are what you want.
So it's whoever wants it that gets it.
Yeah, you get what you want. You dream it and it comes to pass. So for me to say that somebody is lucky or unlucky means that I'm believing that there's good luck and bad luck. There is no such thing.
What if everybody wants it?
Sorry?
What if nobody wants it?
It's your consciousness that will not decide that.
Because everybody
wants it. Your thinking, your consciousness decides whether.
All the things you guys are saying quite likely are correct, but but I'm not hearing you at all, and therefore I cannot respond to you with my point of view. But I will say this to you. Every person who wants to be a success and wants to have money puts a cause in motion to get do it. Now, I have a book, and it's called The Woman Who's 88 Years Old and Who Has Won Every Lottery She Entered in the Last 50 Years. Every single lottery. She has houses and money and awesome. She won, and the book tells you how she did it. I haven't read it yet, but the book tells you how she did it. Now, would that be something you guys would like?
Maybe.
Would you? Your enthusiasm overwhelms me. Because you don't want it. You don't believe that you can be lucky. You don't believe you can win the lotteries. You don't believe you can do that, yes?
I don't want money through lottery. I want to have money as I want it, not by lotteries.
Okay, you do not want money by lottery. How would you like money?
I want to have it and call it forth.
In what?
Not by the chance.
No, no. In what? You want the money in?
I want money and attract it.
You don't want to attract it to yourself because you want to create it, but you want to create yourself in a position where you have lots of money.
Yes.
Okay. In other words, it's not laundered money.
And not lottery money. We have a lot of chance.
Right. No tensions, no problems with it. No. How would you create yourself having that?
By loving what I do and calling forth, I'm knowing that whatever I do, will bless me. I will have enough money from whatever I'm serving, whatever area I'm serving. Not lottery does not serve anybody.
Now, what if you wanted money from those normal sources, okay? And then, all of a sudden, the government called you and said, you've overpaid your taxes for 10 years, and you get $10 million back. Now, would you take it?
Yes.
But yes. What's that?
So that you have paid your tax for 10 years.
I will take it.
You would take it?
I would take it.
Yeah. It's a normal way. I mean, it's not a normal way because that happened often. The government would be out of business. But you take it because it is what you consider honest and legal in the process of doing it, right? Yes. So, if you consider it honest and legal in the process of doing it, now, I say to you, you are a brilliant man. You have a good mind. You are able to be a most exceptional entrepreneur if you wish. And an entrepreneur is a person who takes an idea and makes it grow.
Yeah.
So you take Leo Iacocca. You know Leo Iacocca? Leo Iacocca took Chrysler Corporation in the 60s, and it was going into the bankruptcy and everything else, and he took presidency, or CEO of Chrysler. And then he went to the federal government, and he said, I need to have $30 million. Well, in that day, $30 million was a lot of money. So the United States government says, right, we'll give it to you. They gave him the money. Well, in 3 years' time, he paid that back to the federal government. He's one of the rare companies that paid back loans that they got. Okay, now, playing the game here for a minute, he's one of the rare companies that paid back the loan. Do you mean to say that all the other companies who got loans and they didn't pay them back were being dishonest? Yes, they were, weren't they? They were stealing money from the people and thinking that it didn't matter. They were thinking they could steal money that didn't belong to them. They borrowed it. You go to the bank and you borrow money and the bank takes your equities and things like that. If you don't pay up, they take your whole operation, you know. But the government didn't do that with him. They did it with the corporation, but the corporation paid back the money. And so the government didn't have to take over Chrysler. Now, wasn't that a most unusual way to do it? And what did Leo Iacocca say? He said, my salary is $1 a year. Of course, he was worth several billion dollars. But he said his salary was only $1 a year. Now, what would you think of that dollar that was paid for him for taking care of that company and taking it out of the red and making it into a financially solvent company? What would you think of that? Pretty good, wouldn't you? Yeah, pretty nice. Now, all of us, we do these things. We all are involved in opportunities to do wonderful things. Now, you are a nice man, and you have neighbors, and sometimes you go over to the neighbor and you do something pleasant for them, and the neighbors say thank you, and then you go your way, and then another time you do something nice, and then the neighbor dies, and the neighbor has had no one do something nice for them except you, and so they put you in their will for 100%, and so you received all of their money from their will. Would you take it? You should. Yeah. It's yours. No, it's kind of unusual, isn't it? It doesn't happen every day. It doesn't happen every day, but it's the principle. No. I know what you're fighting against. You're fighting against the thing that we're getting ill-gotten money. Money that comes to us without honesty, you know. And so we have to be careful that we don't pull that sort of game on ourselves, because when we do that, then we are making a lot of trouble for ourselves. And if we make trouble for ourselves, then we're out of business. But you can do it. I had a young lady who called me at the campus, and she said, "I want to see your campus. I want to see the monastery." So we brought her up. She is 89 years old. We showed her the campus. She said, "I like this place. I like you people." And she says, "I have a church that I'm not using. Would you like to have it?" We said, "Sure, happy to have it." A church that is already adjudicated. Many people have churches in the United States, and they have it to teach their philosophy and teach their dreams and stuff. And her church was a proven church. So we said, "Well, thank you. It's a corporation. We can change its name and change its details or anything we want." So then she said, "Well, just a minute, I want to give you my checkbook, the church checkbook too." So she gave us the church checkbook, and we said, "Well, thank you very much." Thinking it's a couple $100, you know. And so we opened it, and there it was, $257,000. Now, that's a nice chunk of money. And we said to her, "Now, look, you are excited about us right now. You think we're wonderful. You think that this is a great place and so forth, and you're welcome to come visit anytime. But we're going to put your money on hold. So if in a year you want it back, it's going to be there. We were going to buy this property next door, but then that can wait. That's not shit. But you buy that property. And if I change my mind, you can give me the property." And we said, okay. So we bought the property, and she didn't change her mind. And that was rather nice. Now, is that good money? Had we ever dreamed or imagined that it might come from just that way? We were open and receptive. And as we were open and receptive, it came. And then every month, she had no money, but every month she sent us a check for $300. Every month. And where are you getting this? You got some little game going? But no, she has money from this thing. Well, she moved in with her cousin's ex. Her cousin died. She was 97. And her husband of the cousin was 86, something like that. Well, she died. So he had this big house, and he said that Dorothy could live in the house with him. And so Dorothy moved in. She didn't like it too much because she no longer was an independent lady doing everything that she wanted to do. Now, he made the meals, and he took her driving. He did everything. And you know, it was not very, very good for her to do that. But even so, he received pensions from 8 different companies in the United States that he had worked for over his lifetime, and they were paying him thousands of dollars every month. And she received pensions from her husband's work and her work and things like that. They were paying her a good amount of money. And so she was funneling it to the church up in the mountain, to the monastery. And that was very nice. But she is a most amazing lady. Most amazing. But we had no idea how the money would come like that. Now, that lady was not very nice to us. She was 93, no motivation to live, so she died. So the money stopped coming. So her $300 a month stopped coming, and that was kind of nice. It was just sort of a little dependable thing, but it became undependable. So you never know how these channels are going to come, how these things are going to work out. So you just open your heart to the highest and best and watch it happen. It's exciting. Yeah. But truly, I want to listen to you I want to hear what you have to say. I want to answer any question you think I can answer, and I want to answer it clearly, but I must be able to know what you're saying. And I do listen very carefully. I put the earphones on the other day, and it didn't help any because it's your dialect that gets to me, you know. So, I'd appreciate it if you just make sure I understand what you're saying. Just make sure that you're a teacher, being articulate and speaking clearly to your class, you know. And then I'll do whatever you want. Because I love you. Yes. You know what articulation means, don't you? To speak clearly with good diction and good words so that it can be understood. Yeah. Okay, anything else? What are you pointing at? What are you pointing at?
I'm raising my hand.
Oh, you're raising your hand. Okay. Yes. I see. She keeps pulling it down. Okay. Your question? And say it clearly and loudly.
Since I came in, we have not done carried out any meditation. We have not done meditation collectively.
Since she.
You want to tell me what she said? Please do.
We have not gotten a joint meditation, group meditation.
Here.
Why?
It wasn't in the program.
It's not in the program.
Yeah, it wasn't in the program. You mean like the 3-hour meditation?
Yes.
Did you like that?
Yes, yes.
Did you like that?
Yes.
You like the 3-hour meditation? Why did you like the 3-hour meditation? Did you like the 3-hour meditation enough to do it yourself? At
not
home?
Collectively.
Yeah. Yes.
But you liked it when I did it.
Yes.
Because all sorts of neat ideas came up.
Yes.
I never knew what I was going to say, and they all came up so beautiful. Yeah, that's kind of fun. Well, talk to Sybil and see if she would like to fit it into the program for one time or so, or two or three or four. I think we have how many days left? Three? 4 days?
Three.
3 days left. So if you want to see what she has to say, I'm perfectly amenable to do anything. They are very demanding, but I'm happy to be demanded upon because I dearly love you all. And the people on the ranch, they listen to our talks down here, and they say they are the best talks. They hear them from all other areas. They're good talks. But you guys inspire me to say things and talk about things that I never say to anybody else. Because you're special. Okay. But you talk with Sybil there and see what you can work out. Any other? Okay. There. We'll see you later. I love you.